Russell Kirk was one of the chief founders of American conservatism, and his book, The Conservative Mind, has been one of its most influential texts. And he, too, was suspicious of militarism. He was a critic of high military spending and opposed the Vietnam War, albeit privately. By the 1990s, he was an outspoken opponent of his government's military interventions and was concerned that they were making his country unnecessary enemies. Presidents Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson were enthusiasts for American domination of the world, Kirk said in 1991 at the Heritage Foundation. Now George H.W. Bush appears to be emulating those eminent Democrats. In general, Republicans throughout the 20th century have been advocates of prudence and restraint in the conduct of foreign affairs. As for wars for democracy, Kirk, being the traditional conservative he was, could hardly take the idea seriously. Are we to saturation bomb most of Africa and Asia into righteousness, freedom, and democracy? Kirk wondered. And having accomplished that, however would we ensure persons yet more unrighteous might not rise up instead of the ogres we had swept away? Just that is what happened in the Congo, remember, 3 decades ago? And nowadays in Zaire, once called the Belgian Congo, we zealously uphold with American funds the dictator Mobutu, more bloodstained than Saddam. And have we forgotten Castro in Cuba? In his book, The Political Principles of Robert A. Taft, which he wrote with James McClellan, Kirk noted his subject's aversion to war. Taft was the great exemplar of the old right in the Senate in the 1940s and 1950s. War, Taft perceived, was the enemy of Constitution, liberty, economic security, and the cake of custom. Though he was no theoretical pacifist, he insisted that every other possibility must be exhausted before resort to military action. War would make the American president a virtual dictator, diminish the constitutional powers of Congress, contract civil liberties, injure the habitual self-reliance and self-government of the American people, distort the economy, sink the federal government in debt, break in upon private and public morality. He went on. Taft's prejudice in favor of peace was equaled in strength by his prejudice against empire. Quite as the Romans had acquired an empire in a fit of absence of mind, he feared that America might make herself an imperial power with the best of intentions and the worst of results. He foresaw the grim possibility of American garrisons in distant corners of the world, a vast permanent military establishment, an intolerant democratism imposed in the name of the American way of life, neglect of America's domestic concerns in the pursuit of transoceanic powers, squandering of American resources upon amorphous international designs, the decay of liberty at home in proportion as America presumed to govern the world, that is, the garrison state, a term he employed more than once. The record of the United States as administrator of territories overseas has not been heartening, and the American Constitution made no provision for a widespread and enduring imperial government. Aspiring to redeem the world from all the ills to which flesh is heir, Americans might descend, instead, into a leaden imperial domination and corruption. Richard Weaver, still another central figure in the history of conservatism, and perhaps best known for his book, Ideas Have Consequences, opposed the atomic bombing of Japan and spoke with contempt of Theodore Roosevelt, who would strut and bluster and intimidate our weaker neighbors. Weaver wrote an extraordinary essay on the immorality of total war in his book, Visions of Order, arguing that of the many things which cause us to feel that spirit indispensable to civilization has been weakened, none should arouse deeper alarm than total war. The conservative sociologist Robert Nesbitt reminded his audience that war was revolutionary, not conservative. He likewise warned that socialist proposals have often, under wartime conditions, become the law of the land. These last three figures, Kirk, Weaver, and Nesbitt, share something in common. One of the most useful and respected studies of American conservatism, George Nash's book, The Conservative Intellectual Movement in America Since 1945, identifies these three men as the most important thinkers among what he calls traditionalist conservatives. That means the three most significant traditional conservative intellectuals in the post-war period were all wary of militarism to one degree or another. None were pacifist, naturally, but they all believed that war was something so materially and morally catastrophic that it genuinely had to be considered only a last resort. And since, as Randolph Bourne said, war is the health of the state, they also understood the undesirable domestic side effects of war, such as taxes, debt, lost liberties, centralization, and the emasculation of the Constitution.